Hi, I'm Rachel, owner of I Am Raquel, and this is my podcast, From Rock Bottom to Badass. This podcast is a place to discuss all the things that go into a complete rebirth. It's about the journey of making over yourself and making over your life. It's about stepping onto a path of going from wherever you're at to the best life possible. Here, we will discuss solutions to all the things that help people rise from the ashes like a phoenix. From the normal everyday life stuff to the super spiritual woo-woo world of metaphysics, you will always be enlightened and entertained.
Rachel, 2 Chainz.
Yeah. Yeah, I just hit record, so that's going to be in there. Rachel, 2 Chainz. So that's how we're going to start this off, you guys. I'm Rachel 2 Chainz, and I'm Rachel with I Am Raquel, and this is my podcast From Rock Bottom to Badass. And today I have a very, very, very special guest. It's one of my dearest friends, Miss Lindsay Durrett, and she is going to share with us some stuff about recovery today.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited to get to do this with you. It's so special to me. The very first question is, I already know who you are, but tell everybody who you are. Who's Lindsay?
So my name is Lindsay. I'm in recovery. My sobriety date is October 9th of 2018. I have sponsees that I work with. I currently work in a treatment center, and that's the first time I've ever worked in the recovery field. But it's always been a goal of mine since the first time I got sober in 2016. But I guess I had enough smarts about me to know that I needed to get some real foundation myself before I tried to jump into that field. And I had told myself, I've got 2.5 years now, and I told myself this time around that when I got 2 years in, that I wanted to really start looking into working in the recovery field. And I had my 2-year celebration, and about 2 weeks later, I was approached about an opening at the treatment center that I'm at now. So I don't believe in coincidences. I believe in God, and I believe in everything happens for a reason. So I have a really good life. I work my program to the best of my ability. Every day is not perfect. I'm not perfect. It's not rainbows and unicorns all the time, but I've definitely found a better way to live today that doesn't involve having to put something in my system to get through it. So, and I have a 19-year-old son who still lives with me. I have a dog named Titus, who, if you're on Facebook with me, you know that I'm absolutely obsessed with him. And that's pretty much it in a nutshell, I guess.
All right. So this whole show is about rebirth experiences and recovery experiences. So define recovery.
Recovery for me looks like not regretting that I wake up every day. Not praying that I don't wake up the next morning, because for me, at the end of my using this time, for the last couple months of that, I literally prayed every night that God would take me, so that I wouldn't have to do the same thing over again, which was struggle to get the next one, lie to my friends and family, deceive, manipulate, all of the things that are not my core. You know, they're opposites of what I really am. And for me, recovery is waking up in the morning, like, with real hope and excitement, and living in the moment as much as possible, and just kind of staying present and having a support group around me that helps me get through things day to day, because there was a very long period of my life where I didn't know how to cope, and I didn't know how to handle the things that life threw at me, which is life on life's terms, as we call it in recovery. And so my go-to was automatically to numb, to pour something over that so that I didn't have to feel. So I would do that, but I was only, in essence, creating more problems, more stress, more struggle, more heartache, which just kind of buried me after a long time into, like, this quicksand kind of feeling that I had every day for a very long time. And, you know, recovery for me is not running from life today. It's having healthy tools and a healthy support system, and just looking at the world in a different way. You know, we have what's called a spiritual awakening when we work the 12 steps. I'm personally, I belong to the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I also acknowledge and believe that there's multiple ways to recovery. But for me, I went through a process of working those steps that have given me a spiritual awakening, which in essence, I look at the world and its people differently than I used to today.
Wow. So I have to just stop. You guys, it's been a long time since me and Lindsay have sat down and had like a good recovery conversation. And I have chills all over my body. I can just feel that.
You saw me struggle.
It's everywhere. And you're a different person than even the last version of you that I had the pleasure of encountering. And that person was recovery oriented. You know, that person was all about it. And you just have like a different piece about you that it centeredness about you.
Yeah.
That is just so incredible today. So I just had to like stop and acknowledge like how cool this is to connect with you again. And you know, no matter where we were at in our journeys, it always felt like this, like really, really cool. I could feel the spirit all over the place when you speak, like I know you're connecting to something else. You ready for the tough question?
Sure.
What have you been through? Like, what did you have to recover? What did you have to recover from?
I had to recover from myself, from lies that I told myself, from heartbreaks that I brought on myself. So I always kind of share when I speak on my story about how I had a really good upbringing. I've had a really good life as a child, a good childhood, good parents, good home life. And I was pretty much the picture of what shouldn't turn into an addict or an alcoholic, but I still did. And for me, you know, I had the isms that they talk about as a child, the never enough. I didn't feel like I belonged. I felt like I didn't measure up to anybody else. I was constantly trying to prove myself like my whole life. And that caused a lot of heartache. That caused a lot of people to want to leave me and to not want to be around me anymore, which in turn led to me resenting them and being heartbroken over and over and over. And because I didn't understand that I set those balls in motions with my unhealthy thinking patterns about myself and beliefs about myself, I had a lot of resentment and I was hurt a lot. And that kind of set the tone for the way that I would live the rest of my life. And for me, I'm recovering more than anything from a negative self-image and an unhealthy self-image. You know, a lot of people have like prison in their time or in their history, or losing their kids to the state or to family or whatever. And that's not my story. Fortunately, that's not my story. I believe that if I would have continued on much longer, that could very easily have been my story. So I'm not confused about that. But for me, the ultimate hell is to isolate me and put me away from other people, because as you know, I'm a social butterfly. Like, I love being in the mix of people. I love people. I don't meet a stranger. I have full conversations with people at Kroger that I've never met before.
And you the know, cows and the farms.
Yes, girl, trying to hug a bull. I mean, my craziness.
You guys, she was like caught taking pictures of her on the internet, just like overtaking pictures and talking to the cows in the field.
But the bull, I mean, he was really calm. And he was just eating hay or grass, like no big deal. So I was like, he's going to come and let me pet him. I just know it. Well, he did. But like that's an example, you know? Yeah. And I think the coolest, one of the coolest things about recovery that like, I can actually say that I love things about myself today. And it's always been a very fine line for me between self-confidence and pride and ego. I always thought that if I acknowledged good things about myself, that I was egotistical and prideful and people be like, well, that ain't even cool. You know, she's full of herself. Today, I know that there's a healthy balance in those things. Mm-hmm. And my favorite characteristic, someone asked me this recently, what was my favorite thing about myself? And my response was my childlike wonder. Like little things get me so excited and make me so happy. And like, I just noticed things today that I didn't always notice. And what it is it takes me back to being a kid again. And I lost that early on. I had some things happen to me as a small child, but I think, let me just leave that there. I have some unresolved things that I think are a pattern or beginning of patterns. But I had some things happen and, you know, I tried to grow up like a lot of us do. I tried to grow up way too fast. And because of that, you know, I missed out on what being a child really meant. And it's not that those opportunities weren't there for me, because it's not like I had to take care of anyone else. I wasn't on my own at an early age. It was my mindset of trying to always be further along and older and more mature than I always was. So I robbed myself of being a child. So today in recovery, when I get to experience the things that make little kids happy, that's when I'm in my element. Like, that's when I get excited. That's when I get happy. You know what I mean? That's what kind of, I guess, awakens my spirit is kind of how it feels, you know? So I had to really recover from not being good to Lindsay.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't really that the world wasn't good to me. It was that I was never good to me.
It's my biggest root as well.
Yeah.
And it's a struggle to just live yourself in a world that teaches you to do the opposite.
And I've always heard you can't love somebody until you love yourself. And I've heard that and I'm like, that's retarded. That doesn't even make sense. You know, if I say I love you, I love you. But I've learned recently that the things that I don't love in myself yet, or that I can't get through myself or through my higher power, if I'm not there yet, I'm going to insist that you give me those things. And that's not fair. That's not how it's supposed to be. That's setting you and me up for failure, because I'm seeking validation in someone else that I should be getting from within or through my higher power.
Yeah.
So I finally, like, that piece just kind of clicked in the past couple of months with me, like, oh my God, I get it. Because anything that I feel like I'm lacking, I'm going to demand it from someone else, and that's not helpful.
Yeah. And I, on another side of that, like, I've heard that phrase, you know, you can't love somebody else until you learn to love yourself. And I realized, I think you can love somebody else more than you love yourself. Like, I would give other people all the grace in the world. You're allowed to be human. You're allowed to make mistakes. You're allowed to, you know, whatever. And then, but beat myself up for those same exact things. So I learned to kind of flip it and use the way that I loved other people unconditionally as a mirror. And anytime, if you can do that for another human being, then you can at least do that for yourself. Right. You know, so I would.
And I try to.
Around.
Yeah, I try to see the best in other people. Like, I truly believe that at everyone's core there's good. Mm-hmm. And then things happen along their life that sour that or damper that or darken that spirit. But I believe that everybody at their core is good. So I tend to see the best in people. Like, when people in my circle go out and start using again, I'm the last to know. And it's like I'm completely oblivious. Like, I'm like, no way. And then everyone's like, how did you not know that? You know, and it's like, I choose to see the best in people, but often when it comes to me, I see the worst. You know, you can tell me 9 things good about me, and then somebody comes along and says that 10th thing and it's not good. I'm not going to focus on the 9 negative or the 9 good things. I'm going to focus on that 1 negative thing. And then my mind tells me they wouldn't have said it if it wasn't true. But then I don't apply the same logic to the positives. They wouldn't say it if it wasn't true. Those I'm more like they're saying it because they have to, or because I'm right here in front of them, or to people please or whatever. It's like, I will go out of my way, you know, and it kind of takes me back to, I realized something when I got sober this time, that when I first came into the rooms the first time in 2016 to try to get sober, I had a hard time believing and trusting other people. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to save my life. Like, they literally had these pools and this program that had the power to save my life if I would just trust and believe, right? I struggled so hard with that. But put me on the street using drugs, and I have met people in parking lots that have introduced me to the drug that I wanted, and I trust them immediately. And it literally has the power to kill me.
So silly.
powerful.
Yeah.
Powerful. You know, like, I can't trust you to save my life and guide me, and you have 10 years sobriety, but I can trust the random person in the parking lot that the dope that they sell me is not going to kill me.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just insanity.
Mm-hmm.
So we were talking about the things that you've been through. So how did it all affect you or change you? And you can talk about negatives, you can talk about positives, any of that. What's the impact that the things that you went through had?
There was a sequence of events that happened to me from like 15 to 17. I won't go into every one of them, but one of them, my parents got divorced and I moved out with my mom. And at the time, my thinking was, cool, you know, I get to do what I want now. You know, I have more freedom. And at the time, I was doing things, but I was sneaking and doing them. And a lot of that had to do with, not that my mom was okay with them, but a lot of it had to do with, I didn't want my dad to know because I didn't want to hurt him and I didn't want to break his heart. So my first thought when I found out they were getting divorced is, cool, he's not going to be there to see what I do. So it's, you know, I can rock and roll now and do whatever I want kind of thing. And that's, you know, that's selfishness. Like, my parents are getting a divorce. My family is about to disassemble physically. And that's the best thinking that I could do, you know? In that same time frame, I met what I consider the love of, or the first love, my first love, you know, went through the whole spiel of that. We were together for about a year and a half, absolutely devastated and broke my heart when it ended. Didn't think I could survive. And I pushed all of that down. And looking back, like, I used to be a really sensitive kid. Like, I would cry watching like news on TV of like devastation and earthquakes. Like, I remember crying and getting upset over things like that and feeling so powerless and hopeless to help people as a young kid. Like, I was so emotional. I wore my heart on my sleeve. Well, somewhere along the lines between 15 and 17, I disconnected emotionally. And I didn't even realize that until the past couple of years doing like self-work, but I numbed, and it got to the point where things would happen and I would say, why am I not affected by this? Like I would go to funerals and force myself to look upset because I felt nothing.
Yeah.
But I knew that if I showed that, I would look like a callous, heartless person. And I didn't want anybody to think I was callous and heartless because I wasn't. But then again, why am I not upset? Why do I not have these emotions, you know? So I disconnected. And those particular situations, along with a few more in that same time frame, you know, I was very promiscuous as a teenager. I did a lot of things that I didn't want to do, but I was searching, I guess, to fill these voids when I was doing them. I didn't respect myself. You know, I lost myself quite a bit in my teenage years. And then because I didn't know that I was losing myself and I had already developed these patterns of behavior, they carried on up until, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, they carried on and they just progressed over the years. And, you know, I've made a lot of bad decisions that have harmed myself and other people. And I think the whole time I'm trying to just kind of fill this void and again, return to that little girl that I cut off in her development. You know, so a lot of my decisions have, a lot of the things that have happened to me in my life have caused me to make bad decisions and to not know my worth and to place my worth in other people's hands and to seek validation from other people, places, and things instead of looking at within. Mm-hmm. You know, I've always tried to overcompensate and to overachieve, to kind of deflect from the ugly that I felt like I had inside of me. Like, if I can keep all this together, you know, like today, I've always taken care of myself, like physically and like my appearance and all of that. I've always been like that. Yeah. But before, it was so that you wouldn't see the bullshit on the inside. Today, I take care of myself because it's the right thing to do. I want to, you know what I mean? I care about how I look. I care about how I feel. And I'm okay with the inside today. It's not covering it up anymore. But for the longest time, I had to keep all of this together, because if I didn't, I would look the same way I looked on the inside, and I couldn't have you seeing all that.
Isn't that amazing how we can do, we can exhibit the exact same behavior outwardly where nobody else in the world would know what was going on or what our true intention was behind doing that behavior? And it could be for two polar opposite reasons. Like, who would know except for just you? It's really like that relationship we have with ourselves is so fucking important.
You're the only one
in the entire world that could have ever called you out on that.
Yeah. And it's like they say, like, you can lie to me all day long, but you can't lie to yourself.
Right.
You know, and that's where my decisions and my journey took me. I had forced myself to believe things about myself because I couldn't look at myself. Like, there's no way I can sit down in therapy or talk to you about what's happened to me or tell you what's really going on in my mind right now. We can't do that. You know, I need to mask up. I need to overachieve in this area. I need to, you know, be the best at everything that I do so that you don't know that I'm a hot freaking mess on the inside. I mean, for real, that was my life.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying I'm not a hot freaking mess sometimes today, because the people that know me and love me and are close to me will testify that I have moments, you know, but that I'm way better than I used to be, man. Like, thank God, you know, like I said in the beginning, I don't wake up every morning pissed off that I wake up every morning.
Yeah. That's everything. That is a life changer.
Yeah.
What helped you survive all of your experiences while you were in the midst of it? What got you through?
Probably knowing that I had Aiden and that I didn't have a choice. Like, I wanted to end it several times when I was using it in the madness, but I didn't have the nerve to do it myself, which is why I would never have been able to take my own life. It was never even really a thought, but I didn't want to live.
Yeah.
So it was that mercy prayer, you know, like, God, just have mercy on me. You see what I'm going through. You see what I'm dealing with. If I do it myself, my son or my family's never going to understand that. But if you take me, you know,
right.
It's a dark place to be. It's a really, really dark place to be. But yeah, I would say in the hardest times, that's what got me through. Like, I can't leave him. His dad's already wherever, you know, I can't leave him parentless.
I know what you feel like. I have been in that pit.
Yeah.
More than once. I don't wish it on my worst enemy. So talk about the spiritual part of your recovery.
So the spiritual part of my recovery is my recovery. I'm connected to something bigger than me today. You know, when they say it's a spiritual program, again, I look at the world and the people in it differently. You know, I try to remember that, you know, for example, in the news and things all the time, you hear about these heinous crimes being committed, these just horrible, unthinkable acts against other people. And the old me would be like, lock them under the jail, you know, throw away the key, off with their heads, an eye for an eye. And I still believe in consequence and punishment, of course, but my first thought more than not today tends to be, that's a sick person.
Yeah.
Like, nobody in their right mind is going to commit these kinds of crimes. There's something not connecting up there. And then when I'm able to think that, I'm able to have compassion, because for one thing, bad is relative. What might be bad to me might not be bad to you. And yes, there are crimes that are just heinous, like I said, no matter how you look at them. But when I can look at the person as a sick person, not knowing any better, and remember what it was like when I was sick and my thoughts in different ways, and how it was my own personal prison that I never thought I would get out of, I can have a little bit more compassion and understanding for them. when I get mad and want to retaliate, and again, I'm not perfect. Sometimes I do retaliate in little ways or whatever, but that's not my first thought anymore. I try to have integrity today, like when no one can see me, but still doing the right thing. You know, like putting your basket up at the store. That's a common one that people talk about, but it starts there. You know, there was, I had about 6 or 8 months in this time sober, and I was at Walmart, and it was pouring down rain, and I had to park for whatever reason all the way in the back of the parking lot. I always have an umbrella, but I did not have one that day. So, I mean, it was a perfect storm. So I go in, I had to get everything under the sun. I come out and I get my car completely loaded up, and I look, and there's a little bitty $3 CoverGirl eyeshadow in the bottom of my cart where I forgot to grab it and pay for it. Again, $3 eyeshadow. So in my head, I'm thinking, number one, I didn't do it on purpose.
Right.
Number two, it's $3. It's an eyeshadow. Number three, it's raining. Number four, I don't have an umbrella. Number five, I'm in the back of the parking lot. Like all these justifications, right? So I decided that it was okay because I didn't do it on purpose. So I get in my car, I start my car, I put my seatbelt on, and girl, it was like, I can't do that. So I unbuckle my seatbelt, turn my car off, walk to the pouring rain to the front of Walmart, go through U-Skin, nobody's business, pay, leave, get the receipt, and I go home.
Yeah.
It's little things like that, that if I don't keep a grip on them today, then those little bitty things, eventually I'm gonna hit the F it button and I'm gonna do whatever I want anyway.
Yeah.
So those things, you know, that's a spiritual change in me, you know, because if I believe that I have God in me, then I need to act like I have God in me and choose accordingly. And again, I'm not perfect. I make decisions that I know my higher power is not happy and pleased with. But I try to do right, and I try to make amends, and I try to just be the best person that I can be, and just stay connected. You know, I try to pray every morning, and I try to do the mental gratitude list when I get up in my head. And when I do those things, then when my sponsees call me, and I pray, like whenever a sponsee calls, I say a real quick prayer before I answer the phone, like, God, take over. And there have been times where I've said things to them on the phone or in person or to other people that I'm trying to help or whatever. And as I'm saying them, I'm learning them.
Yeah. You're like, well, like, that's good.
Yes, bro. I'll say something and I'll be like, I don't, like, that was not mine.
Right.
Like, I didn't even know I had that in my brain. So that was God. Like, that was 100% God, you know? And just things like that allow me to stay connected, you know, because if I'm not connected, if I'm stuck on self, if I'm worried about Lindsay and what I'm going to do and how it's going to affect me, I'm blocked off immediately. You know, there's literally been 3 different times in particular that throughout my period of trying to stay sober over the years that I have been sitting in this very seat in this car in my driveway, crying my eyes out to either my sponsor or someone in my support group. And I kid you not, 3 different times, a bird has come and landed right here on my driver's side mirror and just sat there. It's happened to me 3 times. It's birds, girl. I don't even freaking care particularly about birds. Like, I like birds, but it ain't like I'm studying birds and I have a bird collection and all that shit. Like, I don't even bond with birds.
Bird collection.
For whatever reason, God has chosen multiple times in multiple ways to use birds to get my attention. But if I'm going through life and I'm stuck on myself and I'm not present to see those, it's just going to be a bird sitting on my mirror.
Yeah, you just be like, get away from my car.
Yeah. So to me, spirituality is staying connected to something bigger than me. Voice. Yep. I've never heard him audibly, but he definitely speaks through people and occurrences and situations. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah.
And that's God speaks to everybody differently. It's like whatever God knows you'll pay attention to is like what will be used.
Yep. What's
so beautiful about how God talks.
The same person can experience God and that's at the same time, but the person that needs the message in the moment is going to notice it more.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. It's such a personal relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So talk about, do you feel like certain parts of you are healed or together now? Or do you feel like that it's always a journey, always a struggle, always a battle? Do you feel like that you constantly change what you're working on, or you know what I mean? Like, is it to recovery? Talk about, because I hear some people say, oh, it's always a battle. Like, every day I fight to stay sober. Every day I fight to, you know, not be triggered by my trauma. And then other people are like, oh, no, it's, you know, I healed that. You know, like, what is that for you? How do you feel?
As far as fighting against things, I think that's where the struggle comes in a lot, is that I'm fighting. You know, if I relax and just do the next right thing and go through my day calmly, if I can be patient enough to do that, then, you know, the struggle comes in because I'm struggling. I'm trying too hard on my own will to force things to happen that aren't mine to change. Like, they're too big for me to change. You know, I need to put in some action and act accordingly and act the way that I want to be. But God has to come in and actually do those things. You know what I mean? Like, make those changes. So for me, I would say it definitely changes a lot. Some things that I've been dealing with for a little while now, like on a consistent basis, are insecurity, for sure, and seeking validation from other people. Those are some things, like, I'm definitely better, I guess, in those areas than I used to be, but they're definitely defects of character that have been brought to my attention through experiences and through just through other people talking to me about them, and like my support group bringing them to my attention like they're supposed to. And so those are a couple things that I've probably worked on a lot. Something that's gotten better with me is balance. That's something that I've always struggled with, and it's never going to be perfected, but I'm finally getting to the point where I'm a little bit better at it. Mm-hmm. And another really big one for me that I'm not used to doing, but I have been doing, is just saying no to things. Mm-hmm. Because I have the fear of missing out disease too.
Oh my.
So I've always thought that if I'm invited, I have to go. And if I don't get in, or if I don't go, then what if I miss out on something really cool? Or what if I miss out on memories? Or what if I don't go, and then the next time we're together, y'all are talking about how much fun it was, and I don't have anything to contribute because I didn't go? Who freaking cares? Like, right. I'm finally to the point where if I'm too damn tired, I'm probably going to stay home.
Yeah.
Like, I'm getting to that point where self-care looks a lot different to me than I used to think. You know, self-care means disconnecting from toxic people or shutting out negative energy. Not necessarily that they're a negative or toxic person, but maybe they're stuck in a negative toxic loop and refuse to come out of it. Mm-hmm. I have to disconnect because I'm an empath to a certain extent. I don't think I'm like all the way empath, like all the different, you know, abilities that an empath really has, but I definitely am empathetic. Or
everybody has energy that can be affected by,
yes, girl,
energies, no matter.
And I'm very sensitive to that. I can be in a really, really good mood and someone walks in the room and starts bitching or being negative about something, and I'm like, and I feel like I have to like detox from people sometimes.
Yeah,
you know, so I've had to be more mindful of what I subject myself and my energy to and my well-being to, like just simply staying home sometimes to just be home. Good. It doesn't matter what I do, just not be running all the time, you know, because for the longest time, like when we had our card reading session a while back, and you said, I don't know why I'm telling you this, but something about you're worthy when you're still.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I had literally just been thinking about all of the things that I had to do and how I was failing because I wasn't getting them done, because I wasn't moving enough, because I wasn't accomplishing enough. And when you said that to me in that moment, remember, we were both floored, like, oh my God.
I'll never forget it.
No, it was powerful. And to me, you know, I've always thought I had to accomplish. It goes back to that overachieving and getting all these things done so that you think I'm this big, you know, this great person and I'm doing all these wonderful things. And that's what stopped me up in my recovery the first time around, because everything was a checklist to me. I wasn't really giving it thought. I wasn't putting any energy and emotion and feeling into it. I was like, oh, you want me to write a paper on my last run? Okay, blah, 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 blah. Here you go. Yeah. You know, and until I could really
going through the motions.
Yes, going and I got what the motions give you. I got a relapse. You know, I worked my steps and I went back out, and you know, I celebrated a false token birthday after going back out for a month and a half, you know. So I got to like 10 and a half months and celebrated a year. 2 weeks later, I'm detoxing on my sponsor's couch. You know, because I could not get honest. I could not, you know, give in to the simple set of spiritual tools and the simple program. I had to complicate everything. I had to make it a checklist because I didn't understand it yet. And I know today that I just didn't know what I didn't know. I wasn't ready at that, all the way at that point. You know what I mean? But today I try to put meaning into the things that I do. I try not to be robotic in my movement. If I'm doing something, like if I'm sitting here talking to somebody in person, like I work at a treatment center and I'm with the clients the whole time I'm there, basically. And if I have all these things on my mind and a client's like, hey, can we talk for a second? Or they sit down in front of me, I do everything in my power today to stop what I'm doing and physically be at that, right there with that person, because that's precious. Someone has chosen to sit down and talk to me and confide in me and trust me for a minute. And I need to not be like, oh, well, what are we doing? What's next? What time is it? You know, what's on the schedule? You know, like what is in front of me needs to be the most important. My sponsor tells me to be where my feet are, you know, to be in the place that I'm at and quit trying to be in the next minute or the next hour or the next day or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's, there's been a lot of changes. Definitely. These last 2.5 years, this time of being sober have been like amazing in the growth department. Like I'm baffled all the time. I'm just blown away by just differences that I can see in myself. It's crazy.
It is an undeniable change. And I'm so happy for you to see you. So
thank you.
Just in your skin.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
I've been working a bit on that too, because I'm like, where can I alleviate some responsibilities? I've actually been like just letting the house be messy, which to not be able to handle. And now I'm like, I'm watching Netflix tonight.
A big difference in me, I think today too, is that like, I don't apologize for my flaws today. That doesn't mean that I work on, you know, that I let them run wild and that I hurt people. But if I fall short on things or if I make a mistake, like I'm fully 100% okay with telling you today, you know what, I screwed up. Here's what I did. Yeah. You know, what do I need to do? I made the wrong choice, or I acted on a defect of character, or I was driving down 65 listening to Jesus music, but cussing out the dude in front of me because he was going too slow. You know, whereas before I would be like, oh, everything's fine. Yeah, I'm good. How are you? No, if I'm a hot mess, I'm going to tell you today I'm a hot mess. Like, I don't even know. I'm a hot mess right now. And that's okay. Because today I know that it's okay to be like that. And I've learned transparency is so important. Like to be exactly where I'm at and to let you see where I'm at, that helps other people. Because when people with 10 or 15 years of sobriety share in a meeting about having a really bad day and they just feel like they're falling apart emotionally, that gives me hope that you don't have to be perfect all the time. Like it's okay to be exactly where you're at. You know what I mean? So I've learned that by me doing that, that I can help other people know that they can sit in their truth and their transparency as well. Because I can't get the help I need if you don't know where I'm really at.
Right.
And that leads to dying inside again. And that is somewhere I do not want to be ever again.
Acceptance and authenticity at its finest.
Yep. Yep.
So let's see. 46 minutes.
Good questions, by the way.
Thank you.
You're on it.
So we've talked about spiritual support a lot, and you've talked about your AA group in terms of physical support here in the world. Um, what is one thing that I loved so much about 12 steps in AA was all the quotes and sayings and mantras. And I love that. What is your favorite quote, saying, mantra, motto that like you always go back to help get you through a tough moment?
Progress, not perfection. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That one hits a lot. And I tell people that all the time, because again, I work in a treatment center and we're introducing them to AA. So a lot of them that have never had experience with it are like, we're doing this again. We just read about that. Or why are we hearing that again? And I'm like, repetition is so important. I promise you one day it'll click. You know, like hearing the readings over and over, like the promises, you know, fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us, we cannot do for ourselves. You know, when I finally experienced those things, yes, girl, when I finally experienced those things and could see myself in those things, it hit different. It meant different. You know what I mean? But the progress, not perfection, is probably my favorite because it reminds me that I don't have to be perfect. And as long as I'm, like I tell my sponsees all the time, to be okay with where they are, as long as they are moving towards something. You know, that doesn't mean to be complacent and quit working on yourself and be like, I'm good where I'm at. It means I'm okay where God has allowed me to be in this moment because I know where I'm going. And I know that I have goals and I'm actively working to be a better person. If I fall back, okay, what am I going to do about it? Pick myself up, do something different, learn from it and move on, you know? And I like stay in your own hula hoop too, because I need to be reminded of that one.
Stay in your own hula hoop.
In your own hula hoop. I like to veer into your lane sometimes and tell you how to drive your car and when you need to go get the oil changed. And I needed to stay right here.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Oh yeah. When I get really chaotic in my head, I always know it's because I'm trying to like control some shit that is not my job.
Yep.
That is my immediate go-to. All right, what are you trying to do that really ain't your job right now, Rachel? Because you would not be feeling like this if you were in your lane.
we don't struggle in God's will.
You would feel empowered, you would feel ease, you would feel peace if you were in your lane. And if you chaotic, you in somebody else's lane.
Yep. And it's so hard to remember that in the moment because you're so stuck in yourself at the moment. And your wants and what you need and that you're late for an appointment and they need to get out of your way. And how dare them take so long at the restaurant when they know you got to be somewhere. And, you know, one of my sponsors told me that lack of planning on your end does not constitute an emergency on mine. Because it's so true. Just because I don't plan things the way I need to, that doesn't mean the world owes me anything.
Right.
But we're selfish in our cups. We're selfish and we got to actively work to get out of that. So
that's cute. I love that. All right. So let's say you get a chance to tell every single person in the world that's getting ready, that's in the midst of a recovery, rebirth experience. You get to tell them just one piece of advice that will help them get through. What would it be?
Trust the process.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I say that all the time at work. I say that to my sponsees. I say that to myself. And it helps in those times of needing to control a situation. If I can remind myself, trust the process, you know, that's helped me with this whole COVID situation. Last year when it all started and everything was up in the air and like I had to come to the point because I was watching Andy every day religiously at 4 or 5 o'clock. And like, oh my God, the numbers are this. And oh my God, we got to
have to stop now.
And girl, I'm like freaking out. I'm anxious all the time. And for one thing, when everything shut down, I was off work for 6 weeks. And right before that, I was telling a friend of mine, I need a freaking break. I feel like I never get any downtime. I'm go, 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 go all the time. And then like a week later, we're shut down for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And when that happened, instantly, I recognized. I was like, all right, God, I see you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take this time. Yep. And I did, girl. I got on Zoom meetings. I stayed connected to recovery. I did a panel on Zoom. I picked up sponsees at my house on Zoom. Right. You know, I worked out. I did things that fed my spirit. I did things that fed my spirit as much as I could, you know. But I had to I had to kind of come to the point where I was like, okay, I'm not Fauci. I'm not Andy. I'm not Trump. I'm not the CDC. I'm none of those things. So I need to trust the process and trust that the people in charge and running this shit show mm-hmm. know what they need, know what they're doing more than Lindsay knows.
Right.
So trust the process, you know, when all the, you know, unexpected things have happened, trust the process. You know, when people are, the clients are at my work and they're like, well, why do we got to do this? And I'm ready to go and I'm uncomfortable. And I'm like, just trust the process. Trust that everything that you see us techs running around doing and making happen, there's so much on the back end that you'll never see that it takes to run this place. Trust the process. When we have to change a group time or when we have to tell you that we're doing something different at the break of a hat or the drop of a dime, whatever, trust the process. Like it comes in handy all the time.
Surrender.
And it reminds me that I'm not in control.
Yeah. So we've talked about where you've been, where are you going from here, and what is next on your journey?
I try to stay, of course, one day at a time and not get too far, but I know that I'm supposed to plan. I'm just not supposed to plan outcomes. I've learned that. So I, like I said, I work in the recovery field. I'm a tech right now, but there's a lot of different ways to advance where I'm at. And I know that I want to stay in the recovery field. This is my purpose. Like I say today that I don't have a job. I have a purpose. Like I really don't feel like I'm going to work. I feel like I'm going to serve my purpose every day. And it's so fulfilling and it's gratifying and it's humbling. So I want to stay in that field somehow. I don't have my own place, and that is the goal for me, to have my own place. I hate saying that at 40 years old, but transparency is key. It is what it is. Mm-hmm. I have never given myself a chance to get on my feet and do anything different until the past couple of years. You know what I mean? So trust in the process on that one. But I've kind of been toying around lately, not really toying around. It's been kind of heavy on my mind that I might want to go to nursing school. And I was talking to somebody about it. And well, actually it's my dad. And he was like, why don't you wait until you have 3 years sobriety, and which is in October. And if it's still hot and heavy on your mind, then pursue it. Make sure that it's not just something that's, you know, you're thinking about. Make sure that it's something that you're supposed to do. Pray about it. And my goal, if I end up doing that, I want to stay in treatment. Like I want to be in the nursing field in a treatment center somewhere. So that's my goal. And just more than anything, just number one, continue to stay sober, because I can't do shit if I don't. Mm-hmm. And just stay on the trajectory that I'm on right now, where I'm willing to look at myself and I'm willing to grow and I'm willing to accept my flaws and my assets, because I have to have both. Mm-hmm. So just really to stay in God's will and whatever that looks like for me, and be okay with that.
I love that. Do you have any shout outs or final words?
A shout out to all of the people that hold me up every day, man, because I have a tribe. I have a tribe of men and women that they speak life back to me and they speak recovery back to me. And there's times when I have to pull up on one of them and be like, okay, I know that my thinking is absolutely wrong right now. I know that I'm not thinking recovery solution oriented at all right now. So I need to vent, and then I need recovery. Like I need you to feed me back the things that I know that I'm not thinking about right now. You know, so there's definitely a lot of people. I have an amazing support group. And if anybody out there is listening and watching and you're thinking about getting sober, or your life is a mess, or whatever the case may be, man, get in the middle of some type of solution and get close to the people that have proven it works, because they will literally hold you up when you cannot stand on your own two feet. Like my support group, I've had the same home group for the whole time I've tried to get sober since 2016. It's been right around 5 years now. And I've had the same group of women in my life the whole time. And they still continue to this day to hold me up when I can't do it myself. And all they want from me is to be okay. You know, that's it. So that would be my biggest piece of advice, is to get to seek help in whatever avenue works for you, and then to develop relationships with some people that have proven that it works.
Phenomenal. I love you. Thank you for being here.
I love you. This was awesome. Thank you for letting me do it.
Awesome. Totally fed my spirit today.
Okay.
Well, I love you guys so much. I am really, really glad that you're here listening. I'm glad if you made it to this segment right here. Oh, you're a fucking rock star. I can't even believe that you did that. You're a fucking champion. But I wanted to tell you a little bit more. If you like this stuff and you want to see more from me, I would love that. So follow me on all the stuff. I am Raquel on everything. That's IamRockL. I'm on, I think, every social media that exists in the world. So you can follow me everywhere. I dish out free, helpful content all over the place, religiously, every day. And you can also check out www.iamrockhill.com. I worked really hard to make my website pretty, so please check that out. And from there, you can go to I Am Raquel Academy. I Am Raquel Academy supports this show. What it is my online school. That's right, I got my own online school. So it's a coaching school, so you can do self-coaching work by purchasing online courses made by yours truly. And what it does is when you purchase courses from me at IamRockHell.com, you support this show. It enables me to continue to make free, helpful content for people all over the world. So definitely check that out. This podcast episode is brought to you by my book, How to Wear a Crown, A Practical Guide to Knowing Your Worth. How to Wear a Crown is an easy-to-read guidebook that gives its readers digestible content and step-by-step instructions on how to increase one's sense of self-worth. It's a practical guide to knowing your worth that will allow you to dive deep into my personal experiences with learning self-love and gaining unshakable self-worth. It's a witty but intelligent book that will break down the intense process into four rules. 1. Speak to yourself like royalty. 2. Treat yourself like royalty. 3. Carry yourself like royalty. And 4. Honor yourself like royalty. Each category discusses multiple topics related to emotional growth and techniques necessary to drastically improve your self-worth and help you feel like you deserve more and better things in your life. You can get How to Wear a Crown, A Practical Guide to Knowing Your Worth on my favorite store in the entire world, Amazon.com. And it's usually available to ship within 1 to 2 days. So go check it out now. So thank you so much for being here and listening to my podcast. I just want to say that I'm really grateful and honored to be guiding you along your journey from rock bottom to badass. And if you want to see more about me and my work with my company, I Am Raquel, then you can check out www.iamraquel.com. And you can see all of the stuff about my book, my blog. You can reach my I Am Raquel Academy from there. All of the stuff. And you can follow me at I Am Raquel. That's at IamRockL on all the socials. All of the info that you need should be in the show notes. And I will see you guys later. Mwah, bye.